the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk, the final hour of Sports Talk with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. We've got the sports fix coming your way. We've got comments from Rusty Bradley, Grace Christian, Lamar Brown of West High School. But it's time to fire out our trivia question, and we're going to be giving away a $25 gift certificate to Batteries Plus Bulbs. Now, they provide high-quality products. They offer national brands and exceptional value. Your one-stop shop for specialty batteries and bulbs, chargers, and phone accessories. Expert installation as well. Take advantage of it. $25 gift card, Batteries Plus Bulbs, if you can answer this trivia question. All right, it involves Tennessee football. Here we go. Gene McKiever played for Tennessee 90 years ago. He has the Tennessee record for career rushing touchdowns. Who's number two on the list? And I can promise you it was a guy that didn't play that long ago. A recognizable name to folks. Gene McKiever has the Tennessee record for career rushing touchdowns. Who is number two on that list? 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to Danny. Danny, you're on the Sports Fix.
Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
Hey, great. Danny, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. You want to know who the second one was?
Yes.
Let's see. Joshua Dobbs.
It is not Dobbs. I tell you what, though, you're pretty close.
Oh,
Dobbs is okay. Is third on the list with 32 rushing touchdowns. McKiever had 37. So, Danny, that was a really good guess, but not quite correct. Let's go to Mark. Mark, you're on the Sports Fix.
Oh, goodness. I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I just got in like 1 minute ago.
Yes, Gene McKiever holds the Tennessee career record for rushing touchdowns with 37. Who is second on that list?
Wow. Oh, goodness. I don't guess you can tell us how far back we're going, can you?
Well, I mentioned McKiever played 90 years ago. You don't have to go. I'll say this. It's within the time frame when I started covering Tennessee football, and that was 1985.
This is a wild guess. I'm going to say Little Man Stewart.
Well, that wild guess will pay off for you. Little Man Stewart is correct. James Little Man Stewart from 1991 to 92, product of Morristown. He had 35 rushing touchdowns in his career, and that is second only to Gene McKiever, who had 37. Josh Dobbs had 32. Stanley Morgan had 28. So, anyway, those are your top rushing touchdowns for Tennessee. Congratulations to you, Mark. You have won a $25 gift card to Batteries Plus Bulbs. So we're going to put you on hold and get that gift certificate to you, Mark. Good job.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And that'll do it for the Sports Fix at 6. Vince, I got a question for you here. So. Okay. A former offensive lineman that played with Cam Newton in Jacksonville, in Carolina, he said that the combination of Bill Belichick and Cam Newton is terrifying. He said that together they could do some great things, and he thinks that Cam Newton will be used in special ways to take advantage of his talents. Dan Orlovsky with ESPN said, look, Brady and Belichick last year weren't terrifying. Why in the world would Cam Newton and Belichick be terrifying? And then Marcus Spears weighed in and said, Orlovsky, you never played defense. Cam Newton running the football is a terrifying sight, even if he has a shoulder that is hurting him. Where do you land on this? Brady and Belichick, is that a terrifying situation for opposing teams?
Well, I think another reason why Marcus Spears makes a good point is that look, the receivers weren't delivering, so Brady and Belichick wasn't terrifying for other reasons as well. Now, maybe Cam Newton can offset some of that. To me, the biggest thing comes down to health. I do think that Cam Newton's going to work there. The only unknown to me that brings me cause is Cam Newton's health. Maybe he's fully healthy and feeling great right now, and maybe they'll have the perfect scheme to where healthy he will be terrifying, but how long will it last? Will they be utilizing him successfully, and then he takes a pop on the shoulder, and then now they have to shut him down? Or he has another injury while being effective. So that's my only drawback with Cam, but everything else to me leads me to what that former Panthers offensive lineman said about that combo. When everything right, I think they are terrifying, and I'm even considering moving the Patriots back to win the division, which I've been on the Bills in this offseason. But that's my biggest unknown is the health, and it's only that, honestly.
The offensive lineman was Greg Van Roten, who doesn't play in Carolina anymore. Okay. But he talked about what a headache it would be to game plan for the Patriots with Cam Newton, and that Newton is a game changer. And, of course, that's all dependent upon, as you point out, whether Newton is healthy. That has got to be the case for them, or he's not. He just won't be as effective. And that hadn't just had a shoulder problem. He's had a foot problem. He's had other injuries as well. I think it's going to be very intriguing to watch, to see if he's healthy, and if so, how does New England use him, and do they want to run him a lot to risk further injury to him? So I think the whole thing's going to be interesting to follow to see what happens with New England and with Cam Newton. I'll say this. If you could guarantee me Newton is healthy, I would take them over the Bills. Yeah. Without knowing that, I'm still leaning toward the Bills.
Yeah, and I was going to – one more thing on the Jimmy. I was going to mention this with Mike Keith when he was talking about the Cam and Belichick combo. Adam Schefter mentioned this yesterday. The three quarterbacks on the Patriots roster, Cam Newton, Brian Hoyer, and Jarrett Stidham, this year will make a combined $2.775 million. Dak Prescott will make $31.4
million. I saw that. It's the lowest of any team in the NFL. And and it's by far. I mean, I saw that graphic and I thought, you got to be kidding me. And the one I saw indicated what other teams were paying, and then it had New England. It's like, you better hope in this situation you don't get what you pay for, right?
So, exactly.
But no, I don't remember this. Newton could make up to, is it like $7 million if he hits all incentives? Is that correct?
I don't know the exact number, but I know it was pretty incentive laden. So that makes some sense. But even that is a discount. It's such a low risk. It's a no risk for the Patriots.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, and I think his base is $1 million.
Yeah.
So, thus you have the combined $2.77 million total for them, which I thought was pretty interesting. All right. When we come back, we're going to hear from Rusty Bradley, head coach at Grace Christian. We mentioned John Wilkerson covered the media days that they had last Friday out at Three Ridges with a lot of high school coaches. So he'll be coming up next when we rejoin Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to Alan. Alan, you're on Sports Talk.
Hey, Jimmy, Vince. How are you guys?
Hey, Alan.
Hey, Alan.
I was just going to comment on your earlier conversation about international students. So I was when I started LMU's analytics program, I was not a big bureaucracy guy, so I didn't know about all that stuff. But I learned about it. I had a couple of international students, and it's long been, I don't know how long it's been, but it's long been a requirement that international students essentially can't take more than one. You can look at it one way. They can't take more than one online class, or they have to take at least two, you know, in-person classes, however you want to look at it. And so that's nothing new. Evidently, I did a little research. Evidently, we didn't, none of us heard about it. But when we all had to go online in March, the feds, you know, I don't know what you call it, rescinded it, relaxed, didn't enforce that. And so they decided that they were going to enforce it in the fall. It wasn't a new rule. It's just that they were going to enforce it. And and it would have been a totally stupid thing. The number you were looking for, international students contribute $45 billion with a B dollars to our universities every year. They're most of the profits at a lot of universities, or a lot of STEM, generally STEM, but not always STEM, departments, because they're paying, you know, out of state full fees and so forth. And they also, and this isn't random data, but I saw a whole bunch of pictures on Twitter of people that I follow that run laboratories, you know, cancer research, coronavirus research, and they blacked out or whited out the pictures of the foreign students that are working in the labs, and it was always over half. And so it would have dealt a great blow to our research and everything else. So that would have been just totally, you know, stupid. So it looks like, obviously, I couldn't find the exact wording. Either they're not going to enforce it, or they're not going to make it a rule this fall. I don't know that they judged in the future, but it was the only reasonable thing to do. And then, you know, if people are worried, are these students taking, you know, American slots or whatever? Well, A, they're not. B, we need the revenue. And C, you know, it does say that we as when it comes to science and technology, and, you know, when I went back to school, you know, to get my doctorate, first class I was in, I was one of two out of 30 people. I was one of two Americans. And boy, were those kids smart too. I had to lock the door so they couldn't get into the test sometimes, so I could, you know, make the curve. But anyway, so that's my understanding. It's always been a rule. They just relaxed, and they weren't going to relax it, or they were going to aggressively enforce it. And when I found that out, I had some of my classes were online that I set up. And so I had two students that, it, just the way the schedule worked out, a particular semester, they would have had too many classes online. That's how I learned about the rule. And I had to, and you can always get creative. And so I just substituted a live class for my online class. And actually, the live class was probably harder on them, but they had to do it, you know, to stay. So anyway, that's what I know about it.
I knew it really existed. Do you know the purpose of it? Did they feel like, look, if you're in the United States and taking online classes, you're not really getting the full experience? I mean, what's the thinking behind that?
I do not know the original reason. I can guess. I think it's just we don't want. There's only so many visas. And we don't want someone coming here, maybe it even goes back to, you know, 9/11, I don't know. But we don't want people coming here to say they're coming for school, but to be taking all their classes online and, you know, roaming the country, or, you know, we not know where they are or whatever. I think it's just a means of, you know, making them justify to get a visa. If you want to just go to Phoenix online, and you live in China, then stay in China and you know, and take the course online. I'm actually doing a certificate program in Ireland this fall, and it's all online, so I don't have to do, you know, if I were going to Ireland, I would assume I would be subject to some sort of rules, you know, there. So that's my understanding. So it's okay. Not anything new. It was just something that I think they were going to really, I guess they were just saying, we're going to enforce it and we're going to be active about it. And now they're saying, well, we won't do that.
I was aware it wasn't new. And my concern is, and I think the word they used was rescind, but I'm not 100% sure. And my question is, I wonder if they'll rescind it again next year, but that could depend on the circumstances that we're in, I guess.
That's my understanding from what I read. I did read just one article, and the article did not know, so I don't know. It wasn't clear if this applied to students that aren't here right now. In other words, it's still theoretically possible that, you know, some new basketball player that was going to arrive in the fall is told you can't come. The article didn't know the answer to that question, so I'm not implying that's the case. It said it didn't know. Yeah. So, anyway, all these strange things we're learning. We're all now virus experts and international student experts. Anyway, hey, real quick, can I ask one quick question, Jimmy? And I'll hang up and listen. But
sure.
I hadn't heard much of you today. Were you surprised that the SEC made no decision? What were you expecting? What did you think about the no decision?
They did exactly what I expected. The SEC has tried to wait until the last minute before they have to make a decision. I don't blame them for that. I don't think you have to make a decision right now. I think you have to make a decision in the next couple of weeks, and they've indicated that the end of July they would. But I did not expect them to come out and go the route of the Big Ten, because I don't think that waiting does any harm. At least waiting till the end of July. I think the other conferences could have waited as well. They did not to, and that's okay. But I don't blame the SEC at all for trying to see where this thing's going and get another read on it in 2 weeks or so. So, Alan, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Randy. Randy, you're on Sports Talk.
Hey, good afternoon, Jimmy. And is Vince there with you today?
Yes, sir, he is, Randy.
Okay. Yes. Well, good afternoon to both of you. I know last week when you and John were talking about the Toll situation, family situation, that broke my heart when I heard about Andrew Toll. And I hope that the MLB and the Dodgers are reaching out to him in some form of capacity. I'm sure they have programs where they reach out to players or former players. And do you know if they're reaching out to Andrew Toll, the Dodgers?
I don't.
Or the MLB?
But even if it's not the Dodgers, I hope that MLB will, but I do not know the answer to that. But I would hope that they would.
Yes, you and me both. A couple quick things on football. You know, back when majors played and Paul Hornung and those guys, Jim Brown was not, but Hornung and majors were triple threat backs. They were run past hit guys. And there were a lot of those back then. The last ones that I remember, Danny White, I think Doug Flutie dropped, kicked a time or two, and he could run and pass, of course. And I saw John Elway quick kick a couple times and did a pretty good job at it. Of course, he was a good runner and passer. But does anybody come to mind to you that in recent years has been a triple threat back? Danny White, I really was pretty much more doing it than anybody that I can think of in more recent years.
No. Nobody comes to mind like that. You mentioned a guy that might be the most recent, but I don't recall a triple threat. Obviously a lot of dual threats, but not triple.
Right, yeah. It's pretty common back in majors days with guys like Hornung and him and so forth.
It was.
But one other thing on football, on the COVID-19 thing, so you know, the players won't have to wear cloth masks to keep breathing those things. What about these full-length masks that look like Darth Vader, or they don't even have to be dark like that, but full-length mask. I mean, you know how linemen are up close and personal, and they snort and slobber all over each other, and put body fluids all over each other, sweat and everything. What about full masks were required and no open spacing for those guys, or all players, really, backs, everybody? Full mask, that's your masking right there, and you can breathe. I mean, no open spaces, no open space mask, just full mask required. What do you think about that?
The NFL's testing the Oakley mouth shield. And is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, you know, you've seen these full masks where they're dark and you can't see their faces, and they're
yeah.
They're like Darth Vader or something. But I
understand
that.
I was asking you if you knew about the Oakley mouth shield.
No, I have not really. I'm not familiar with that. Enlighten me on that.
Well, that's something that the NFL is proposing. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the one that I saw was clear. It just had a shield in front of you. Almost like what you're seeing with some doctors or nurses in these emergency units and hospitals. But I don't know the best solution to that. Obviously, there's a risk that's going to be taken, no question about it. Everybody knows that. But I don't know the best protective device. And maybe this Oakley mouse shield will be that. I don't know. But I'm familiar with the Darth Vader type thing you're talking about as well. That might be a good answer also.
You know, Pilot and all these stores have these barriers between these plexiglass barriers like that, something like that. But, you know, last year at this time, the big talk was beer sales. I mean, it was constant. But I bet you if they have football this year, they won't be selling beer. What do you think?
No.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, well, thanks for enlightening me on that. I wasn't aware of that. And let's hope and pray for Andrew Tolles and that family situation there.
Yeah, exactly. Randy, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Rusty Bradley, head coach at Grace Christian. With Vince Farrar, I'm Jimmy Heim. Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Let's hear now from Rusty Bradley, head coach at Grace Christian. He was at the media day that was held at Three Ridges last week. Our John Wilkerson was there, knocked out a ton of interviews, and one of those was with Coach Bradley. Here's John Wilkerson's interview with Rusty Bradley.
I know this is as unique a media experience as you've gone through, but tell me, what has it been like to go through the first half of this year? And how has your team handled so many challenges just in finishing their last year of school and getting ready for a year where there are so many unknowns?
Our kids have really done a good job handling it. We've got 17 seniors that are very mature. They're experienced players. And when we were finally allowed to start back once school ended on May 26th, I told our guys we need to try to focus on what our goals are and not our circumstances. And our guys have really done a good job of every day, don't worry about the circumstances, how we're having to do things, but just focus on what we've got to accomplish. And our guys have really done a good job of that. We were able to get a pretty good amount of work done in June to where we basically recovered our spring practice that we missed. So I felt really good about where we were when the dead period started. Now it's about trying to juggle how much to put on our kids, not knowing when we're actually going to be allowed to start.
How challenging has this been to manage in your seat?
It's been tough. You know, I'm a big planner and wanting to go ahead and get everything done and everything mapped out, and I'm kind of having to live week by week as far as what I'm wanting to plan to do. That's been tough, but I've got about two or three different plans. I'm just kind of waiting to see which direction to take. It's definitely a little bit different because you're used to being so busy this time of the year with 7-on-7s practice, getting ready to start up, and scripting practice and preparing and, you know, meeting with your kids and so many things, and I'm just kind of sitting here not really sure what to do or which direction to take. So it's definitely different. It's different. Nothing like I've ever had to go through before, obviously.
How did you keep tabs on your team through the end of their last year of school, and how have they done in terms of being as football ready as they could be for this?
What we did was once we found out that we weren't coming back to school and we weren't going to have spring practice, we started off by just sending them workouts to do on their own. But about the last 6 weeks of school, we actually did Zoom workouts 4 days a week. So we got on Zoom at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock each day and had our guys, we took them through a body weight workout and did some things. And our guys, number one, they did a great job of getting on and being a part of the workout. And I think that really helped. So we stayed in touch with them that way, obviously calling them, checking on them, making sure they were doing their schoolwork. And so we came back May the 26th, and we weren't nearly as out of shape as I thought we would be. Guys had done a good job staying active and finding ways to get work done outside of our Zoom workouts. So I feel like we're in a really good place right now.
What was it like to do all of that virtually?
It was definitely different. It was trying to get creative with what we did with our kids, trying to make it fun. We would try to do a scavenger hunt on Zoom and have them go run and find something and bring it back. We tried to get creative with it, and our guys handled that really well. It was just such a unique time. I think our guys were excited just to be able to see guys, see their teammates, even if it was on a Zoom call, just to be around them and interact with them. I think that was good for them.
As far as your team, what will be the biggest challenge to replace from last year's squad?
I think the nine seniors that we had, we've got 17 returning seniors. We've got 17 returning starters from last year's team. But we do have some holes to fill with some guys that didn't play a lot last year that we've got to develop. I think that's the biggest challenge. And then obviously last year we had more depth than what we're going to have this year. And so that's going to be a big challenge for us, is trying to develop more depth and have more younger guys that are ready to play.
What are you most excited about in terms of to return as much as you do from last year, but what areas do you think are going to be your best strengths?
I think just our senior class. Just, it's such a good group of kids, and a lot of them have played since their sophomore year, so it's just a great group of kids that are very close that I've really become attached to, and I'm excited about seeing them go through their last year of high school football together. That's a group that I came in, they were finishing up their eighth grade year. And so they've kind of gone through this whole cycle with me of seeing the program grow and develop things. And they've been a huge part in establishing the culture at Grace the way that I want it established. And so I'm just excited about seeing those guys get the opportunity to have their senior year. And I want to make sure that they get my best and they get the best possible year that they can have, because I love everything about what they're doing, leadership, bringing the team together, handling the just organizing everything, pushing each other, and just handling the morale of the team each day. They're setting the tone every day, and it's a fun thing to see.
Just considering how different the preparation for this season is, how vital is it that you do have such mature, responsible team leaders? Because I think there's more required of high school football players coming into this season than has ever been required of any previous teams.
I think having these seniors that are so experienced and so mature and together is invaluable. They've done a really good job of holding each other accountable, of holding the younger kids accountable, of showing the younger kids, hey, this is how we do things, this is what it's like. When guys weren't on the Zoom workouts, they were checking to see where they were. It's been invaluable, and they've done a good job of, when I say, okay, guys, this is different, but we've got to handle it, they've just accepted that and taken that and run with it. So it's been invaluable for us, and because we're so experienced, I think anything that's caused us to maybe potentially be behind from a football standpoint, because we're so experienced, it's not going to impact us as much.
In regards to football health, how is your team doing right now?
We're doing really well. I was really pleased with where we were when the dead period finished up. And we really set our summer schedule to try to peak at the end of next week so that when we start practice the next week, we're ready to practice. And so we're honestly scaling back a little bit until we have an idea of when we're going to actually be allowed to start. I feel that good about where we are, not just strength-wise, but just conditioning-wise, what we've been able to get done from a football perspective. I think we're in a really good place. And so we're honestly scaling back and trying to focus on our younger kids. I'm not really worried about the guys that are going to be starting this year, but developing depth and focusing on our younger kids and our 2021 team.
Is there, of all the plans that are being and options that are being discussed and considered, is there one that you favor the most?
You know, honestly, for me, I like the not being able to start until August 31st, playing 8 games, and then 16 teams making the playoffs. We only had a 9-game schedule anyway. I'm willing to lose that one game for us and our classification. 16 teams only make the playoffs anyway. And what that does is give us 5 to 6 additional weeks to develop our 2021 team, our younger kids, our sophomore kids, our freshmen, and to really focus on fundamental skill development, getting stronger. And so that's kind of what I'm in favor of. I think football starts too early anyway when you're starting practice on July the 20th this year. And I think the season can become a long season. And so I'm for the not starting till August 31st, the season starting September 18th, us playing 8 games, and then having a 16-team playoff, just so that we can develop depth, develop our younger kids, and also hopefully get the numbers for this virus back down.
Well, here's hoping that everything stays on or gets on a path that puts us in that direction. And I do have to ask, outside of Grace, with Tennessee continuing its preparations, what is it like to see all of the attention coming Trey Smith's way and how he's handled winning national awards and yet having that desire and that drive to be the best player he can be, job one, and celebrating what his teammates are doing, number two?
Trey is the most unique individual I've ever been around. I saw greatness in him from the first day I met him. And he is one of the most selfless people that I've ever been around. His desire to be good, his desire to be the best he can be, he had every reason when I was at USJ to relax, to not work hard, because he was the number one player in the country, and he wanted to get better every day in practice and was asking my dad questions. And just his maturity, his drive to be good is unlike anything I've ever seen. His selflessness, wanting to be a good teammate, putting others before himself, everything that you want a teammate to be and a player to be, that's what Trey is. And to see him win awards and have that perseverance be rewarded with fighting through, having to battle through the issues that he's had health-wise, and seeing that be rewarded, and him leading that team off the field in just so many different ways. The sky's the limit for him, not just in football, but in life, because he was raised the right way, and he's an incredible individual.
Coach, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Best of luck and good health to you, your family, your staff, your team. Good luck to Grace this season.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Comments from Rusty Bradley, head coach at Grace Christian. Just a couple of other notes out there. Yasiel Puig has reached an agreement to sign with the Atlanta Braves. No fans at Eagles or Phillies games. That's per city officials. So we've got that out there. Of course, I think sometimes these things can change. And the Cleveland Browns are finalizing a massive 5-year extension worth $125 million for Myles Garrett, according to ESPN. So the deal's worth a total of $145 million over 7 years. And we make Garrett the highest-paid non-quarterback in the NFL. A massive deal right there. All right, when we come back, we will hear from Lamar Brown, head coach at West High School. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Because we have a transmitter, and you don't. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. We want to bring you now comments from Lamar Brown, head coach at West High School. Our John Wilkerson on the scene at the media days last week, and he caught up with Lamar Brown. Here comments from West High's coach.
I know there are still a lot of questions to be answered, but how exciting is it to be here and simply talking about West football and football in general today?
Well, it's good to be talking about football finally. It seems like we've talked about everything else up to this point. So it's good to be here. It seems like it's a little bit of the normal back again. So we'll see where it goes from here. But our kids are excited to get back and get back to work and do some stuff. So we'll just see where it goes.
We got to talk to you right as you were able to start getting back on the field. How has your team handled it, and what do you think of the Rebels?
It's been really good. It's been good for me. It's been good for our kids to be back around each other and get back to a sense of normalcy again. They have worked really hard. Of course, you know, over the time that we wasn't together, we had some kids that worked really hard, and then we had some kids that probably didn't do a whole lot. So we're trying to get those guys back in shape and build their strength and getting some type of conditioning before we start practice.
How did they handle the dead period?
It's been good. We actually extended our dead period one more week just because of, 4th of July was on Saturday and everybody was around family members and stuff. So we thought to protect us a little bit, let's extend it one more week and make sure nothing's going on. And so we're really excited to get back to work on Monday.
There's been so much conversation, and rightly so, because, again, more questions than answers right now. But as they talk about different plans and options, is there one that you favor?
Well, when they came out, I guess I favored the seven games in normal playoffs just because, our region is so tough that, Oak Ridge, who was a really dang good football team last year, was a fourth seed in our region. And I just think to get the best teams in the playoffs in our region, we're going to have four really good teams at least, if not more. So I thought that was the best option, and we'll see where that goes. I don't know if anybody cares about what I think.
Well, here's just hoping that they come up with a plan and then are able to execute that plan. With your team, tell me about the two young men you brought with you today.
Well, I got Baker Dance, who was our starting quarterback last year and a leader of our football team. He's going to be a two-year starter for us at quarterback. He's really grown in his leadership skills this offseason. He's when we've been able to get out and throw and catch the ball a little bit, he's really grown. He knows the offense inside and out. He's correcting wide receivers and running backs, getting us lined up right. I've been really impressed with his growth. Ethan Scott started at linebacker for us last year and was our leading tackler on our defense. And he's another kid that is a great kid and a really good leader for us and helped lead their defense last year.
So as you get back to work on Monday, what is the to-do list? How do you approach handling these summer months?
Well, it'd be good to know when we were starting, and I was hoping TWSWA would make some type of decision on Wednesday, but they didn't. When the plan was for us to start on August 29th, we was going to use the month of July to get stronger and get in better conditioning. Now, if we start on July the 29th, now we really got to focus a little bit more on football, the football side of it, X's and O's side of it. So hopefully we'll figure all that out soon, but we're going to go into it and just try to be the best that we can be, get better every day.
I guess there is still the Hail Mary that if the TSSAA gets the consideration that colleges and pro teams get within the state, then it could be back to square one, which would be the full season. Do you hold out much hope for that, or how do you approach it from your vantage point?
Well, right now I feel like we have to approach it that we're starting July 29th for football practice. And go from there. So until we find something out for sure, hopefully we'll get a plan soon. I know the governor's got some tough decisions he has to make, and when he makes those, I hope TSSAA makes some decisions on what we can do and what we can't do. But up until that point, we got to prepare like we're starting at the end of July.
How is it that there's the one side of the football health that you track, and here's hoping that the Rebels stay healthy this season, but then there's also the virus side of it, and I'm just wondering, how do you monitor, how do you guys manage the Rebels through this?
Well, I think we've done a good job up to this point. As far as I know, we have had no positive cases. We take temperatures every day. We hand out hand sanitizer. We got it all over the place in our field house and on the football field. Our weight room's probably been cleaned more in the past month than it had in the history of it. So our parents are doing such a great job getting us supplies and helping us clean. So, we just have to do the best that we can with it. It's new for everybody. And that was one of the reasons that we postponed dead period or added another week on to the dead period, that we want to be safe, we want to have football season, and I just felt like we had to protect our players and coaches from that and help protect the football season by doing that.
I guess for this to be moving forward, you perhaps need responsibility and a maturity level from your team that not everybody's up to that challenge, especially at this age. But how important is the team leadership, and how do you feel about your team leadership and guys just making sure that they realize that there is a straight and narrow to follow in regards to this?
Well, I feel really good about our leadership. I think we've got a lot of kids that played last year. You know, Andrew Gilbert, who's going to be a senior for us, that started at nose position for us last year, he's probably the best leader we had on the team last year. He don't talk a lot, but when he does talk, everybody listens and everybody responds to it. So we got him back, we got Baker back, we got Ethan, and we got a lot more guys that played a lot for us last year. And this is a tough situation to handle. I mean, I'm 50 years old, and you know, I was really frustrated after the TWSAA meeting that, you know, there just seems like there's no guidance or leadership right now. And I'm 50 and I'm frustrated. I know 15 through 18-year-olds are frustrated also, all the unknown. But we just have to carry on like we're going to play, and everything's going to be as normal as it can be until we're told something different. And I think our kids have done a really good job with that. Our kids were a little bit disappointed when I extended the dead period for another week. Our kids wanted to get back to work and do some stuff, and we sent them some workouts every day of the week, and a lot of them did them, and so hopefully we'll hear something soon and be able to get back to a normal situation, of at least knowing when we start, because it really is hard to prepare when you don't know when you're going to start.
Very true. Coach, certainly hope that we hear good news and good news soon. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck to you and West this year.
Thank you, John.
That is Lamar Brown, head coach at West High School, John Wilkerson's interview with him. Recapping a little bit earlier today, we mentioned about Holly Warlick. She had told ESPN she'd be willing to go help Kara Lawson at Duke, but Holly told me this morning that she has not heard from Kara Lawson. Doesn't expect it to happen. Holly's quote, I'm 99% staying retired from coaching and enjoying doing TV. So Kara Lawson was a star player at Tennessee when Holly was an assistant for the Lady Vols. Tennessee offensive lineman Cade Mays did not file for his appeal until last week. That is one reason the NCAA has not had a ruling on it, because they just received those papers recently. He transferred to Tennessee at midterm from Georgia, and then the door is still open for Jeremy Banks to return to Tennessee. He was dismissed after an incident from last season, and he could end up, if he does the necessary things, could be end up being restated in about 3 weeks, which, Vince, makes it really interesting when you try to take a look at that Tennessee roster about how they will find room for Banks and what purging from the roster they will have to do.
Yeah, and that's something that maybe Jeremy Pruitt and the staff, they already have an idea. All right, this guy will go on medical. This guy's probably going to leave. He just hadn't officially done it yet, et cetera. Coaches always have the answers to the numbers, and they always seem to work out. But as Rob Lewis mentioned earlier, there's opportunities there at inside linebacker. There's numbers there, but there's an opportunity because it's just such an unknown after Henry T. We'll see how it plays out and when he gets there. But he's been bounced around a little bit, so I don't think he's a sure thing to be a star if he comes back.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Caesars has listed its favorites for the NBA when they resume. They like the Lakers, then Milwaukee, then the Clippers, then Houston, then Boston. Do you like those favorites, or do you see a potential dark horse, Vince?
No, I think it's Clippers 1, and the Lakers are slipping back. I mean, losing Avery Bradley, and then on top of that, Rajon Rondo, who averages like 9.5 assists in the playoffs. And now he may come back after the first round, but that could hurt the Lakers potentially getting, you know, that one seed. So I think it hurts the Lakers. To me, the Clippers are the team to beat.
Where do you think that – we only have about 20 seconds. Where do you think the Bucks fall into that?
I would probably put them at third right now behind the Clippers and the Lakers.
All right. Vince Ferrara, thank you so much today. Appreciate it. Great job.
Same to you. Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right. And we appreciate those that call. We appreciate those that listen. This has been Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.